Good morning. Trump says he wants to meet with North Korea's Kim Jong-un again. The Wall Street Journal explains why this round of talks could be even tougher than his first term efforts.
After those failed negotiations, North Korea has only strengthened its nuclear program, the absolute opposite of what Trump had attempted.
A major cancer breakthrough that could usher in a wave of new vaccines. And could the NFL really go international? The Athletic explains how it could work. It's Friday, August 21st. I'm Cecilia Ley, in for Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. As President Trump continues to run into roadblocks on a deal with Iran, he's now turning his attention to a country that already has nuclear weapons, North Korea. Trump has raised the idea of meeting with its leader, Kim Jong-un, in recent days. He had warm words for the dictator in a press conference on Wednesday.
I do have a good relationship with Kim Jong-un, as you know, you've seen. He didn't like Biden. He didn't like Obama. He didn't like anybody, but he likes me. And I just got along with him very good.
Also this past week, the Pentagon drastically cut back on joint military training exercises with South Korea. The drills were designed to help prepare for a possible attack from the North. Trump called them costly and inappropriate to a, quote, unthreatening and respectful North Korea. He also said he was upset that South Korea hadn't offered to help secure the Strait of Hormuz. His general frustrations over Iran might explain why Trump has taken a sudden interest in the region. Alex Ward is a national security correspondent for The Wall Street Journal.
We can't deny the context of the Iran war, where Trump was hoping for a sort of legacy-defining victory there, particularly over a nuclear program. That has not materialized so far. It's proved elusive. And so why not try another front in Trump's denuclearization push?
North Korea has potentially several dozen nuclear warheads, 57 in fact, according to Trump, while the South Koreans think it could be even more. North Korea has been a major national security risk for every modern president. In 2019, Trump was the first to actually visit the country while in office, with an extraordinary summit during his first term. But little came from that meeting. In fact, North Korea has since expanded its military, grown its warheads, and doubled down on cyber theft around the world. And it strengthened its economy, thanks in part to evading sanctions, as well as closer relations with two important countries.
Its ties with China and Russia are stronger, right? There had been some sort of like ties of convenience, but now it seems to be more meaningful, particularly with Russia. North Korea has sent around 11,000 or so troops to fight Ukraine, and that has given its military more recent fighting experience. And Kim just seems to have a stronger hold over his leadership.
Kim Jong-un appeared unmoved, at least publicly, by the U.S.'s gesture to scale back the training drills. His sister, Kim Yo-jong, dismissed it as, quote, not worth making comments on. And on Thursday, North Korea launched about 10 missiles toward the sea east of the Korean Peninsula. Ward says it's unlikely that a strengthened North Korea would see any reason to change strategy now, but that doesn't mean talks would be a bad thing. In fact, South Korea's president has encouraged them in the hopes that it would dial down the North's recent aggression. And for Trump, there's the hope of bringing a formal end to a war between the North and South that technically never ended.
So there could be an end of war declaration. Then Trump could say, great, I ended a major war officially. And he could add that to his legacy and his growing list of wars that he's ended. But what practical effect would it have is unclear, right?
In recent days, the U.S. has removed its last aircraft carrier from Asia to join efforts in Iran, raising questions over how much Trump actually wants to maintain a presence in the region.
I think the U.S. still has a lot of staying power. It has good relationships with South Korea still and with Japan still and with a lot of countries there. It's not like the U.S. has abandoned the region, but it's no question that American commitment, at least in the short term, feels like it's slipping.
A significant step was made this week toward a potentially game-changing way to treat cancer, a personalized vaccine designed just for you.
We don't know if this is going to be 7 years, 9 years, but there's a chance that you have an increased ability to be disease-free and for a potentially extended period of time.
That's Dean Lee, the president of the drug maker Merck, speaking with CNBC about their experimental vaccine, which was developed with Moderna, In a late-stage trial, the vaccine, alongside existing treatments, successfully delayed the return of skin cancer for people with high-risk melanoma. The results have excited the scientific community and the markets. Moderna's stocks nearly tripled following the announcement, a sign of hope for the vaccine's potential.
Lowering that risk of recurrence ultimately translates into more patients who can live cancer-free for longer, and that's really an incredible gift.
Angus Chen with Stat News has been reporting on the technology used to make this breakthrough, mRNA, which was also used to develop COVID vaccines.
This platform of mRNA technology was already really promising, but it's never really until you see the results of a phase 3 trial that you really can trust that it's a therapy that can make a difference in patients' lives. And the way it works is it boosts the patient's immune response against cancer and helps the immune system find and kill cancer in the body.
To create the vaccine, scientists take a sample of a patient's tumor. Then they genetically sequence the DNA to look for neoantigens, which teach the patient's immune system to attack the cancer.
These are really unique to each person's cancer, so that's kind of what makes this a personalized therapy and really makes it more likely that the vaccine will help train the immune system to recognize and kill only cancer cells, not healthy cells that you wouldn't want to target.
It took 6 weeks to create a custom treatment for each patient in the trial. And Chen told us its success has confirmed for the scientific community that mRNA technology has major potential to treat all kinds of cancer. Now, it's still unclear for how long the patients were cancer-free, and the full results have not been released or peer-reviewed, so independent experts will want to examine and check the trial findings. Moderna became a household name thanks to COVID, but its fortunes turned when demand for the vaccine slowed. The company has now revealed what it hopes will be a major turning point for its future and for treating against cancer. For years, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell has talked about his ambitions to expand the league beyond the United States and turn football into a global sport. This week, that vision got renewed attention when Goodell told a German media outlet that he has, quote, no doubt that it will happen eventually. There's some precedent for this. The league has included international regular season games since 2005, and it once had a European league decades ago. In recent years, the NFL has pushed to play more games abroad, and the regular season, which kicks off in just a few weeks, will include a record 9 international games. But there's a big difference between playing a few games outside of the U.S. during a season versus turning the league into an international franchise.
There's a ton of roadblocks here, but I think it comes down to three main things.
Jana Bardal is an NFL writer for The Athletic.
The logistics that these teams go through to get ready for international games is really no joke, and it goes all the way down to the players and coaches, but also the support staff and the people that are also traveling with the team, shipping out their supplies and their gear months in advance, and that can take a lot of extra steps.
Scheduling games would also get more complicated.
Right now, the NFL, if a team plays internationally, they won't play on Thursday night the next week. They'll either be given that full week to rest or maybe given a bye week. So how would an international team be scheduled? Would they play a block of home games and then spend a few weeks on the road so they're not traveling back and forth all the time? And then does that require an international team to have a U.S.-based training facility?
Coordinating passports and visas would add an extra layer of challenges. Also, Bardell points out that many players may not want to play for an international team.
In 2023, The Athletic did an anonymous player poll and asked players if there was an international franchise, would you play for it? And a majority at that time said no. So I think that's also something to think about here, too. How would players react to this? How would an international team have to approach player acquisition around the draft time and around a trade deadline with star players that are really going to make a difference on these rosters?
It's not clear where the NFL would try to expand, but Bardell says there are some likely candidates. Logistically, to minimize jet lag, somewhere in North or South America is appealing, like Mexico's capital.
Mexico City is the second most visited venue by the NFL. The NFL is returning there for the first time since 2022 this season, and they'll play a game in Mexico City in 2027 and 2028.
There's been a lot of speculation about London, too.
just because there has been so many games there. Specifically, the Jacksonville Jaguars have kind of marketed themselves as London's team, and they've played a home game there in plenty of seasons in a row and have tried to establish a fan base there.
In fact, the Jaguars considered temporarily moving to London when their stadium was under construction. The city has hosted the most international NFL games, a total of 42 since 2007. This year, three new cities will host the NFL for the first time: Rio de Janeiro, Paris, and Melbourne, which is where the San Francisco 49ers will play the Los Angeles Rams during the first week of the season. Here are a few other stories we're following today. The aircraft carrier USS George Washington arrived in the Middle East Wednesday to relieve the USS Abraham Lincoln, which has been supporting the war against Iran. The Lincoln was at the center of a controversy for months after family members of sailors aboard the ship complained of serious supply shortages, poor mental health, and deteriorating conditions. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth described reports as completely misrepresented, and the ship received a visit from the head of U.S. Central Command amid the controversy. The Lincoln was at sea for more than 250 uninterrupted days. It's now on its way home to San Diego. A progressive Democrat won a special election for a House seat in California yesterday. Ayesha Wahab replaces Eric Swalwell, the lawmaker forced to resign and end his governor campaign over sexual assault allegations. Wahab was an early favorite and had the backing of the state party as she took on the moderate Melissa Hernandez. The campaign became notable for heavy spending in the final days. Super PACs aligned with the American Israel Public Affairs Committee poured millions of dollars into backing Hernandez, while another super PAC fell behind Wahab to counter. As for Swalwell, he may now be out of the House, but he's still facing scrutiny. The FBI seized electronic devices and searched his home over the weekend. He has not been charged with a crime and has denied the allegations. And finally, one military unit is offering a peculiar incentive for getting some of its troops to re-enlist for service. The U.S. Army Battalion in Georgia says some soldiers who re-enter between now and mid-November are eligible for a special four-day pass to play the highly anticipated video game Grand Theft Auto VI, scheduled for release later this year. The Hill reports that so far, 20 of the 130 eligible soldiers in the Georgia Battalion have taken the Army up on its offer. The only catch, soldiers have to re-enlist for a minimum of 2 years to get the bonus pass. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, stick around for the latest episode of Apple News in Conversation. This week, Men's Health contributor Michael Ander Broder sat down with guest host David Green to talk about the recent explosion in testosterone prescriptions for men and the forces that have rebranded the hormone as an optimization supplement.
The vast majority of young men are not getting their medical information from their doctors. They are simply existing online. And once the algorithm gets a whiff of the scent of your interest, it will make sure that every 10 posts that you see will be an ad for testosterone.
If you're listening in the podcast app, you can follow Apple News in Conversation to find that episode, or come back to the Apple News Today feed tomorrow. Enjoy the weekend, and I'll be back with the news on Monday.